For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everyone, JJ Cooper, Kyle Glazer joining you on a podcast today. We thank you for the download. We're kind of happy to be sitting here together talking baseball before I head out to Arizona and get to see a lot of sun and, more importantly, see a lot of top prospects. But before we jump into that, we do want to thank you for tuning in to today's Baseball America podcast. Our podcasts are sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you're a baseball fan, you need to check out Baseballism.com. And when you go there, visit Baseballism.com and enter the offer code BASHIP, that's B-A-S-H-I-P, and you will get 20% off of your order. And as you've seen, if you watch any of our Facebook Lives, a lot of really cool gear there to check out, a lot of new stuff for 2018. They keep rolling out new stuff, so I'm kind of hoping to stop by the Baseballism store when I'm out in Arizona. But Kyle, we're talking rebuilds. And this is a fun topic because you really dove into, we looked at, this is the year of the tank, or the year of the, to use the terms that the commissioner's office would prefer, this is the year of the rebuild because every team goes in cycles. And we just happened that, one third of the league is in a down cycle right now. So
some of it by their own choosing.
And some of it by, you know.
By natural, yes.
But so with that, you really kind of dove into this. And you dove into it a couple of different ways. I thought one of the most fascinating things you did is you talked to former GMs who've been involved in rebuilds going back to the 90s. And kind of what they learned through the process, and especially you focused on GMs whose rebuilds didn't go, no rebuild goes exactly the way you want, but some of the rebuilds didn't complete the way they wanted, and that gave some very useful hints, tips, lessons learned to carry over into current rebuilds.
I think one of the big things for every, everyone cites, the Astros and Cubs did it, see it works. And you go back and look, for every successful rebuild, there's one that didn't work. And I think a lot of people don't always appreciate that. They assume that, they point to the example of confirmation bias. Look at the Astros, look at the Cubs, look at the Royals. When in reality, no one talks about the early 2000s Pirates. No one's talking about the early 2000s Royals. No one's talking about the mid-2000s Marlins. Rebuilds that, in some cases, if you want to go back to some of the ones in the 90s, we can talk more about, who kind of did everything right. They brought up homegrown cores, they traded for the spots they were weak, they had all these little things that should have amounted to more, and it didn't. And so I thought it was interesting to go back and just kind of look at, what are some of the things that we've learned over time? Because there are successes. The reason a lot of teams are trying rebuilds is, it's not that rebuilds do work, it's they can work. And there are a lot of successes to point to. You just also have to be wary of the ones that, it didn't work. And there are teams, 10 teams are rebuilding right now. A lot of them are aiming for the same windows. Not all 10 of them are going to win the World Series, basic math.
But that's an interesting question, though, because what do we define when we talk about this? If we're saying that a team had a successful rebuild, if the only way that you could define success is winning a World Series.
And that's not how we define it.
Right,
So for these purposes, another example of a successful rebuild would be the Pirates post-2009, where it resulted in
you
them
win 98
winning
games.
And they won three straight postseason appearances. The Indians, as of right now, have not won a World Series. They began a full-scale rebuild 2008-2009. CeCe Sabathia, Cliff Lee, Victor Martinez were the main guys traded. There were a lot of others. They got a lot of high picks. And also, they haven't won a World Series, but it's hard to argue they're not one of the best franchises in baseball right now. That's a success. The A's tore everything down post-2007. It led to three more postseason appearances, three in a row, 12-14. So those are successes. It's not just about winning a World Series.
Right. I always think of the funny thing is I do think a lot of fans, the point I want to make on that is I think there's a lot of fans who look at the Pirates and say that they failed because run that they just had. And another one that goes in with that is you look at the Reds, who basically built at the end of the last decade, And then you had the Cueto, Bruce, Votto, all those, you know, Bailey, all those guys. And they actually had success, but they never won a playoff series. And if you don't win playoff series, even if you win 95 games, it's one of those things where that is deemed by many as a failure, whereas the Giants, who won, which, hey, the goal is to win World Series. They won three of them this decade. But two of those times, they were wild card teams who got there and won it. They get deemed as, you know, as they should be, an outstanding success. But the reality of it is over the course of a 162-game season, we have teams that win 95-plus. If you can do that and go multiple playoff appearances, you had a really good team.
No question. And I think some of the absolutism of, you know, you either win a World Series or you're a failure is not correct. No one should ever look at three consecutive playoff appearances. When you go on a full-scale rebuild and all and quote-unquote all you get out of it is three straight playoff appearances, that is a successful rebuild. So I think that's where, you know, even with that, there are teams out there who go through rebuild and all that ends up happening is you have five more seasons of 85 to 90 plus losses. And I think that's where we say, okay, something didn't work. Here's what did or didn't. And some common themes came up and ones that have been repeated. And I guess I want to start. You and I had a conversation. So look, there's never a absolute, this will always work. This always won't. This is always the case. There's always, you know, tweaks and exceptions. But generally speaking, there are some common themes. Of the, you know, the five themes we were able to kind of boil down to about, okay, rebuilds that work or didn't work or what needs to happen to ensure they quote-unquote work, the strongest correlation one, the one that had the fewest exceptions for, was that when it's time to strike, you have to add a veteran piece. Every single team that tried to, hey, we just have our homegrown core and tried to win only with that, never reached what they were trying to. Maybe they got maybe one season of a wild card, but then they fell back to earth. They were never able to follow it up, or even to some degrees, maybe it's they had two good seasons, but they're 91 win seasons and they're first rounded outs to get to that. Okay, we're, you know, the window, because every team's aiming for a window of 5 to 6 years of competitiveness, you know, goes beyond just first rounded out. That's what you're aiming for, and the teams that were able to achieve that were all ones that when the time was right, they had their young core, they brought it to the majors, and then they made sure to use some of their prospect depth for trades. They opened up the wallet. The teams that never made that final two or three piece additions, whether it's in prospects or money, they fell short. And that was the strongest one. And so that's why, you know, again, whether you want to talk about the Astros, they don't win the World Series without Justin Verlander, Brian McCann. The Cubs do not win the World Series without opening their wallets for John Lester. There's always a final piece or two you have to make.
One thing that I think with that you see pretty regularly with this is when a team makes that breakthrough year, and again, this is a generality. I'm not saying it's happened in every case. But when a team has that breakthrough year, that year that they go from being non-contender to a contender, often, because they usually have, when we're talking about these rebuilds, they have a great farm system at that time. And so there is some desire at that point to say we can win it with what we have. And to use the Cubs as an example, especially use the Astros as an example. The Astros went to the, you know, they were a wild card team, and they didn't really make a whole lot of significant moves at the trade deadline because
they had added Carlos Gomez, which was one significant, but which is going to follow up with that, one's often not enough.
Then they went into the next season, though, and saying, we made the wild card, natural progression, we're going to go take another step forward the next year. And they really were kind of relying on a lot of homegrown talent to fill the needs they had, took a step back, and then the next year they actually did go out. They were very aggressive, not just in acquiring Justin Verlander in August, but also in bringing in Brian McCann and bringing in, you know,
so I think
multiple guys. And so the point being, though, is compare, when we talk about the Pirates were a success, but the Pirates have talked about that they don't want to narrow their window by going all in a season. They want to kind of have a steady level of contention. I agree with you in what you found, which is, no, you absolutely at some point have to sacrifice the future to increase your chances of winning now.
And it's a balance. It's something where if a team goes all in and trades every prospect they have, that's not a great tact. Hoarding every prospect you have is also not a great tact. And again, just looking, and sometimes it's not a matter of trading prospects. Sometimes it's a matter of, if you have the ability to, open up the wallet a little bit. Whether that's signing John Lester to, you know, the big deal the Cubs did, or, you know, sometimes smaller, you know, smaller moves that just improve your team a little bit. I think it goes back to the basics of, to build a championship team, you have to acquire talent from all avenues. That means you have to have, you know, a really good young homegrown core. But there's also going to be times where the prospects you expected to pan out don't. The players that you expected to take a step forward for whatever reason didn't. Someone gets hurt. And it's having the flexibility to make an addition or an adjustment, or in some cases an upgrade, that is going to enhance your chances of being a championship level club. And even though, you know, we talk about in the case of, you know, you mentioned those Pirates teams that never really went out and added, you know, a piece again. We talk about the Indians, they got good. They said, hey, let's go get a big slugger at Mike Napoli, followed by Edwin Encarnacion.
Let's go acquire Andrew Miller.
There's always something you have to do to supplement your homegrown group. Now, you should start with that homegrown group, if especially for a smaller market team. There's no question about that. But expecting it alone to get you to the promised land is not going to do the trick. And that's why a lot of people were screaming about the Padres signing Eric Hosmer. And we can argue whether or not Hosmer is the right pick. And there are times where these big signings won't work. But the thought process is what certain people seem to be attacking. And that's incorrect empirically. The thought process of, you shouldn't sign a big free agent, you shouldn't trade any prospect. Again, you have to pick the right prospects to trade, and you have to time it right. But doing it a year before you expect your window to open is perfectly reasonable, especially when it doesn't cost you a high draft pick.
Or two, if the Padres still are the team. Like, if you say that they're non-competitive in 18,
which they probably,
they take a step forward in 19, but then they're a playoff contender in 20,
which is the expectation, which is the timeline they're hoping for.
They have their first baseman who will be their first baseman in 2020, and we've seen this. We saw this criticism with the Royals back when they acquired Shields and Davis, and it's like, no, their window, they're not in their window yet. They're not in their window.
And the way they were in their window was they. And in one sense, the Royals were ahead of the Padres because the Royals had, in 2013, won 86 games. So they'd already started that upturn, and they said, okay, we need to go out and add, and they did. And a lot of people yelled at them for the Will Myers trade, Will Myers, Jake Odorizzi, getting back Wade Davis and James Shields. They don't make the World Series without James Shields and Wade Davis. They don't win the World Series in 2015 without Wade Davis. And by the way, the Royals, who also this big homegrown group, you know, Hosmer and Moustakas and, you know, Kanan Escobar, who came over as minor leaguers in the Greinke deal. Yes, they did all that. They don't win the World Series without trading for Ben Zobrist and Johnny Cueto midseason 2015. They don't get to the World Series in 2014 without trading for James Shields and Wade Davis. And it cost them good prospects. But it was worth it. And I think that's, again, it's not a matter of, you should, as soon as you have three or four good homegrown players, you should trade the rest of your prospects. No, that's not it at all. You have to be smart about the timing. You have to be smart about understanding what your real window is and an honest evaluation of your franchise. Because if you do make a trade too early, it can also short-circuit you. But this idea that you can win without ever having to make a move like that, which I think we've seen from certain fans who yell anytime a prospect is traded for an established star or they ring their teeth about it, it's just empirically wrong. When I was even, I mean, I had just from years of covering baseball, writing about at the major league level, the minor league level, seeing it, you kind of know that. But when I really dug into the data and looked at the historical examples and seeing just how strong of a correlation that was, it even surprised me a little bit. I mean, it's really, you can really make it as simple as if you have a young homegrown core and you're on the rise, it will not bring you anything beyond maybe one, maybe a second playoff appearance in which you're out in the first round, unless when the time is right, you're willing to go get frontline type veteran players with either dollars or prospects. There's going to be a point you're going to have to do it. And if you refuse to do it, your dreams of a successful rebuild will fall short, period.
So you can't find an example going back, because you went back, what, 10, 15 years?
20 plus. I mean, the closest one you can kind of get to, but it's a little bit of a different situation, because they weren't really rebuilding. They were just terrible, and then something clicked, is the 2008 Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, again, they were never really rebuilding.
Right, they didn't go out and get a whole lot of.
What they did do, well, it's not that they didn't really go out and get anything. They didn't really trade that much away. The idea of a rebuild is you have a group, you've been successful.
When you say though, because your point though is that you have to go out and acquire veterans.
But here's what the Rays did, and so they didn't go get standout veterans. But the 2008 Rays, they did open up their pocketbook a little bit for Akinori Iwamura, who played a role, a bigger role.
No, that's a pretty modest role, though.
He's a starting second baseman, 274, 350 on base. It plugged a hole that they had had and improved them.
They
brought in Cliff Floyd, who that year, the way of the World Series, 804 OPS, 111 OPS plus. They did go out. So they didn't go completely, hey, we're just stick with our homegrown guys. They weren't afraid to go out and make a sign. Sometimes it was a minor signing. None of these were guys they really opened up the wallet for, you know, substantially. But they did cost money. You think about Matt Garza, it's a little bit of a different situation, but they traded good prospects for him. He had come up in Minnesota. He was past rookie eligibility. He'd had
Jason Bartlett
130 pro innings at that point. So he was still young. But he'd established. They traded Delmon Young. They traded Brendan Harris. So I think the 2008 Rays are probably the closest one. But even they did open up their wallet a little bit to make improvements. Again, Akinori Iwamura and Cliff Floyd. No one's going to remember those as enormous superstars. But they strengthened the team they had, and both were good contributors to that 2008 team. Cliff Floyd was 35. Iwamura obviously came over from Japan, was 29. There was still a move that was made. And so I think that's the point. You are going to have to do something. And in this case, a couple million dollars for the Rays, it's something.
And more importantly, most of the time you're going to have to do something significant. But the other thing I think that's worth noting with that is that we've seen in recent years, you can do significant. There are the trades that have cost a lot. But like you look at the Justin Verlander trade, and they did give up. They gave up legitimate talent in that. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, when you're going to have Verlander for multiple more years, we've talked about it. We talked about the trade deadline last year. The price of talent to acquire significant talent. JD Martinez is a really good player. JD Martinez did not cost the Diamondbacks much to acquire last year. Those kind of things. The cost is your willingness to take on salary gives you a lot of options.
And some of it comes back to, again, teams being honest about where they truly are. Those are two examples that work. You can go back to the Angels acquiring Zach Greinke at midseason one year when they were their playoff hopes were not. They were in it, but it wasn't like they were really, really pulling away from it. It was like we're acquiring Zach Greinke for half a season, cost them Gene Segura, didn't do a whole lot for them that year. Some of it is, again, you have to be smart about the veterans you acquire. I'm not just saying, oh, go ahead and splurge.
I will say one thing. The thing that has happened nowadays that does baffle me is with fans is, no, when we're just talking about money, if you're a fan of a team, and especially with the deals that are happening this year, to put it in this way, if you're a fan of the Twins, you should be very happy that your ownership is spending the money to acquire a Logan Morrison, to acquire,
Addison Reed,
Lance Lynn, which again, and they are not forfeiting the future in any way to do that.
Right.
And on top of that, now again, maybe they made the same offer and they didn't go there, but there are many a team who's on that cusp of kind of being in it, but it's like, okay, not many, but there are some. I don't know where the Orioles are right now, but I would say that every one of those guys we just listed would be useful for them. And they're kind of going on the minor league contract, who hopes to make the big league roster instead.
And some of that is a reflection of they have a lot of money tied up in Chris Davis, and there's different, so some of it's financial. But just kind of circling back, and again, that 2008 Rays isn't a perfect example because, again, they weren't a rebuilding team where they had something, they tore it down, acquired a bunch of prospects. They were just
team. But your point is to refine it more is rebuilding teams at some point need to spend prospects to acquire veterans.
Or money. Again, if it's just tough because in the offseason you can spend money. Mid-season, you have to spend prospects. So that's where some of that comes in. But you've got to – there's always final pieces that are not in your organization. You do have to go out and add. And if you don't, you will most likely fall short. So that was the strongest lesson, the strongest correlation that I found. So, you know, we go back and we look now, our Major League season preview is coming out and we were able to put this together and, you know, spinning it forward, kind of the state of the rebuilds. Again, now if you're talking about a team like the A's, we just saw the Phillies who think we're close to ready. They went out and added Jake Arrieta. The A's have not made an addition yet. They might have to, but I think
but then the A's are sitting there with a payroll that, to be honest, is
and that's
when I just said about what the Twins were willing to do.
Right.
The A's are a perfect example. Not that their team, I like a lot of things they're doing, but they're coming in with an opening. They're going to come in with an opening day payroll that is minuscule, and at the same time, they're a team now in a very difficult division. But they're a team that you say you could have spent $5 million or $6 million here or there, and really it pays off.
So that's where, you know, talk about the A's, talk about the Marlins, we talk about the Rays now. You know, the A's are in the second rebuild after 2014. Again, they made three straight playoff
appearances. I will say they did sign LeCroy, so they did at least one of those moves.
They did do
something. I think they could have done more, but they did do one at least.
And we'll see what they decide to do, in whether it's this midseason, next offseason, because you can absolutely look at kind of the group they've put together and say you see something really starting to develop on the pitching side, the powerful lineup. But yes, the A's, if you're a fan of the A's, you're a fan of the Marlins, I think you are, you know, or even the fan of the Rays right now, you have to understand that there will come a point where ownership is going to have to open up their wallets a little bit. No matter how good your farm system rankings are, no matter what, you know, how much your young talent is really starting to blossom, there will be a point you're going to have to add someone, most likely two or three someones. And if your ownership is not willing to do that, because, you know, we talk about trading the prospects, but a lot of times trading the prospects and your payroll goes up because you're adding another major league piece and a half a season of money. If you're not willing to do that, the A's, Marlins, and Rays, you know, in particular, it's a big risk factor for them. And they're going to have to. And if they don't, their dreams of a successful rebuild, most likely, historically speaking, will not come to fruition.
I'll throw another one in there, which is the Braves. And because the Braves have had an extremely quiet offseason. We've written about some of the reasons for that. They obviously had a quiet offseason. On the major league, acquiring major league talent, they have had a quiet offseason. But the reality is they had a very busy offseason because they had a GM who was fired and banned from baseball, and they have a new GM and all that. But that being said, the most important part of the Braves rebuild now, over the next year, at this time next year, what you're saying, they have to have started to spend either in talent or money to bring in big league talent to supplement what they are growing through the farm.
And I think, look, it's completely valid to say this year was not the year to do it. There's no question. You know, the A's, who potentially could have maybe contended this year, you can say they probably should have done it, maybe not. You know, the Braves are still a year away, and you can say it's okay. You know, they didn't do this year. They want to evaluate another. But there will be a point they're going to have to. And that, again, comes back to the timing. When I say the Rays and Marlins need to add someone, doing so right now does not make sense. But when their talent spikes start happening, and the Rays, you know, you're hoping it's 2 to 3 years, and the Marlins, you're probably looking more like a 4 to 5 year timeline. At those points, they are going to have to make a move to start spending a little bit. And again, spending a little, you know, there's a line, again, doing what the Marlins did a few years back where they went and splurged on Jose Reyes and Mark Burley and Heath Bell and spent all this money. Look, you have to spend on the right players and you have to do it at the right time. Spending and bringing in a key veteran or two does not automatically do it. It just, all the successful ones have done it. So you know at some point you're going to have to. And if you refuse to, It won't work. It might not pan out even if you do, but you still need to do it to really have any shot of it working.
Moving on to the next point, which I think is a key one here, is that you also looked at how long this takes. And I thought that was very interesting as well. I mean, again, looking at past performance, we're really talking about that you should think of this as 5 to 5 to 6 years, really, isn't it?
Yes. So, again, we're not talking about the Yankees who traded two relievers and brought up some young talent. Like, we're not talking
about... But they had a one-year blip, basically.
Right. We're not talking about... You know, there are teams who do things, you know, who go down a little bit and they can be good again the next year. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the teams that strip it down, trade everyone. What's the timeline?
The Marlins, if you're along those lines, the Marlins are in year one of this. The Marlins had an outfield last year. They weren't great, but they had an outfield of Ozuna, Yelich, and Stanton. And they're this year going to have an outfield of Brinson, Sierra, and Carlos Gomez.
Cameron Maben. Gomez, Reyes, Maben.
Marlins, Maben. You know, Cameron back, Maben. They've stripped it down, and so they're starting the process.
So
they're as far away. The Royals are kind of starting the process.
So what we found when looking at the timeline, from the year that you start stripping, that it's all stripped down, it's 5 seasons from that point. So in the Astros case, they really stripped it down. 2011 was kind of the big hurrah. So you count
the born
mid-season 2011. Pence. So mid-season, they had started.
I was
going to
say, because you could even say the 10, because they started to...
They were a really bad team. In 2011, they were already a 56-win team. I sort of, you know, in terms of like that, it's all gone. Yeah. From the time it's all gone, okay. I should say. 5 seasons from that point is the first time you can really expect to be competitive. Now, with the Astros, you can say, okay, it happened in 2011, so you count 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014. That fifth season, 2015, was the first time they were really good again. Mm-hmm. We found this with, you know, again, the Indians case. They traded CeCe Sabathia in 2008. 2009 is when they really stripped it all down with Cliff Lee and Victor Martinez and a lot of the other guys as well. Again, count the 09 season when they, during the time they stripped it down, 10, 11, 12, 13, they made that wild card game. That's, again, the fifth year. It really is five. I shouldn't say 5 years because you count the year it starts. It's kind of a zero. So it's 5 seasons from the time that you've pretty much stripped it all down to the time you should really reasonably expect to be good again. And I think a lot of fans think of their total teardowns as 2 to 3 year resets. What we really found is when you tear it down to that level, there is no 2 or 3 year reset. 2 or 3 year reset is, okay, our third baseman's getting expensive. One of our outfielders, you know, one starter is getting a little old. We're going to trade these 2 or 3 guys, but we're going to keep, you know, 4 or 5 core pieces. That's what the 2 to 3 year, hey, we had a down year, you know, gave it a year for a guy to come back, and by the next year, we're really good. That's what a 2 to 3 year, you know, reset is. The full strip downs that we've seen a lot of these teams do over the years, what the Phillies did, what the Braves did, what the Padres did, what the Rays have done, what the A's did a few years ago. Again, all the way back to Indians, you know, post-2009 Pirates, it's 5 seasons. And I think it's something where, again, teams, I think, you know, some of it's season ticket holders wanting to placate them. Some of it's, you know, fans and GMs trying to put a rosy spin on some things. But it just doesn't happen. It takes time for draft picks to matriculate, for international signings to matriculate. And sometimes you get the guys to the majors fairly quickly, but it takes 2 or 3 years, especially for the case of pitchers, to get them really performing at a level that's conducive to winning consistently at the major league level, getting 4 or 5 of them to be doing so, I should say. So I think that was another big takeaway, that the strip down, let's restart, is never a 2 to 3 year rebuild. It's a 5 season. And that's the best case scenarios.
I mean, you know, again, I would not say that there's never going to be a case going forward where someone does it quicker than that, because it's always possible.
But to date,
when you're looking at the rebuilds, that's been the standard. And again, we also see other teams. It's hard to say a starting date on the Royals because they were really bad. But I think it's fair to say you were really at year 7 before you started to see any green shoots of them showing improvement.
And sometimes it's tough, because there are times teams are just genuinely bad.
If you're tanking, the reason you're tanking is A, your owner gets happy because they're saving a gazillion dollars at the big league level, but B, you're getting the top draft picks. Well, the things with that is that even in a good situation, the Astros draft Carlos Correa 1-1 in 2012, and he is proves to be an exceptional player, and he proves to be a fast mover. That said, draft him in 2012, and he's here you go, and he's part of your team, you know, several years later.
2015 for rookie year. And that's and he's one of the fast
and that's picks a fast
for a high
fast,
school
fast.
Pick.
To put in another example, like let's say the Twins, who again are in good shape now, they draft Byron Buxton that same draft, and Byron Buxton may end up never being as good as Carlos Correa, but Byron Buxton's becoming a very useful player. But he goes into 2018.
Years. It'll be 6 years from his draft year.
Exactly. You know, again, Chris Bryant moved really fast. Absolutely thumbs up for the Cubs. Not everyone very, you know, a lot of guys don't move that. And the Cubs have done a good job because they focus on college hitters.
Right.
Chris Bryant, Ian Happ, Kyle Schwarber have all moved really quickly. But even with that, but that's to get us to our final point that I think was key that you talked about is that you can do everything about right, and then the timing can just screw you up, can it?
And that, I think, was the most interesting thing to me, was looking back at certain teams that you look at the names on paper and say, how did this team not win 4 or 5 division titles? How did it not become a superpower? And one the most common theme that came up was that they had this really good crop of position players and a really interesting core of young pitchers. And they brought them up all at the same time. And the hitters adapted and acclimated and were good, you know, within that first year or two. And the pitchers, it was a struggle. They couldn't get – and by the time – it took the pitchers 4 or 5 years to really be effective major league starters. And by the time that happened, those hitters were gone. They had been traded. They had gone from being 23, 24 and really good to 29 and 30 and being, you know, starting to slow down a little bit. The biggest example I saw from this was the Blue Jays of the mid to late 90s, in that they had those back-to-back World Series in 1993, 94, 95. They fell off. So they rebuilt it a little bit of a different way, where, you know, they let, you know, Al Leiter and David Cohn and Roberto Alomar and John Oliver, it was mostly letting them go. But the talent base they had, you know, come up through their system. I mean,
Sean Green, Carlos Delgado.
Sean Green, Carlos Delgado, Roy Halladay, Chris Carpenter, Kelvin Escobar, Alex Gonzalez, Shannon Stewart, Billy Koch, all those guys. And then they followed that group up with Vernon Wells, Alex Rios, Aaron Hill. I mean, all these guys who were also future All-Stars. What happened was they brought all these position players up, and the pitchers, Carpenter, Halladay, Escobar, they were all in the majors together from 98 to 2002, and then Carpenter got hurt. They never jived together. And I remember I talked to Gord Ash, and he mentioned, you know, the A's had Hudson, Zito, and Mulder.
Yeah.
You know, Halladay, Carpenter, and Escobar were every bit as talented, but they was never good together. And it came up where by the time, hey, they had Sean Green and Carlos Delgado and this amazing offensive juggernaut. And by the time all those guys figured it out, well, Sean Green had been traded for Raul Mondesi. Chris Carpenter never figured it out with Toronto. It took a few years. You know, even going back to the Expos, a lot of people talk about 1994 as being the death of the Expos. When I went back and looked, in 96, they went 88-74. They were 2 games out of the wild card. They had, again, this ridiculous group coming up of Vlad Guerrero, Jose Vidro, and Brad Fulmer. And they had this. They made some trades. Again, Pedro Martinez deal was one of them. Mike Lansing was another. Henry Rodriguez was another. And they hit on it in the sense the pitchers they got, Carl Pavano, Ted Lilly, Jake Westbrook, these guys became All-Stars. But they were all acquired in 1997, 1998. They became All-Stars in 2004, by which time Guerrero's gone, Fulmer's gone, Vidro is either gone or close to gone at the very end. And for the record, those three guys who became All-Stars all became All-Stars for different teams. Then Javier Vasquez, who again struggled for a bit when all those guys were in their prime, by the time he kind of hit his prime, again, it didn't match up. The timing didn't match up. And so I think really for a lot of teams, you can have this talent base, but if you've got to time it right. And I think what we see fairly consistently, it's the pitchers who aren't timing it right with the hitters, if that makes sense. You know, the A's coming together as they did in those early 2000s, they're almost the exception to the rule in that Zito and Mulder and Hudson were all good pretty quickly right away. But again, by that point, Eric Chavez, Miguel Tejada, Jason Giambi were all in the majors performing. They brought up some other young position players. You know, people talk about, well, the Giants relied on pitching for their rebuild. They didn't really rebuild because they were in the World Series in 02. They just had a few down years. They never, like, strip-mined full rebuild, and they did.
They can't. From a stadium perspective.
And they had a, you know, and they, to their credit, in a five-draft period, drafted Matt Cain, Tim Lincecum, Madison Bumgar, and Jonathan Sanchez. Four guys in five drafts. That's incredible.
And then topped that off with Buster Posey.
But that's the thing. They then followed it up with Buster Posey, Brandon Belt, Brandon Crawford, had Pablo Sandoval out of their international program, Joe Panik. So, yes, they had this great rotation. They then followed it up with an MVP and four All-Stars, positionally.
Hard to do.
Right. So, and thus, they won three World Series. But again, I think what I found a lot of this was, you can do everything right, but if you don't time it right, it's not going to work. You've got to get your guys peaking at the right time. It can't just be you brought in talent. You have to time it so that the talent is developed, so they're hitting their peaks at the same time. And most of the time, that's where if your rebuild is relying on pitching, it gets a little sketchier, as opposed to the rebuilds who built really with position players. And then you have to have good pitching, but
so again, that's a fascinating, again, to kind of wrap this up, going back to, we have our number one farm system, the Braves, which do have, Ronald Acuna has a chance. The Acuna, Freddie Freeman, and then you throw in the Ozzie Albies, Ender Inciartes around him. That could be enough. I mean, it's not like you're saying that they don't have position players that they're, right. Austin Riley could join that. But it is a lot of pitching, and if those guys take
I think the Braves are in a little better shape because they've brought up Newcomb and Foltynewicz and Gohara already. But I definitely think you look at the names of you know, some of the pitchers that, again, those Expos teams brought up, those Blue Jays teams brought up, some of these other teams brought up, and their talent was every bit as good as, and frankly, in a lot of cases, superior to what we see some of the pitching prospects in some of our current organizations have. And it's just a matter of, and again, it's not that those pitchers didn't eventually become solid pitchers. It just, you know, they didn't come up and it didn't happen in 2 years. It took 5 years, 6 years. And it's more so for the guys who were high school and international pitchers. Mm-hmm. Again, Halliday, Carpenter, Escobar, high school internationals. Whereas, you know, Hudson and Zito were college pitchers. That's another reason why they worked a little faster. So if you're relying on a bunch of arms who were for the most part high school and international drafts, whether you acquire them via trade, draft, your own signings, whatever, it's going to take longer for them to be good and effective in the majors than you think it will. And you have to make sure that your hitters are still on the team and peaking, because we've seen it before. A lot of times by the time those guys click, the other guys are gone.
If you're interested in this, go to baseballamerica.com. We have up on the new website, we have a deep dive on this that Cal wrote, the main story, the cover story from the most recent issue of the Major League Preview. We think you'll enjoy it. We think you'll find a lot to chew on there, a lot even further than what we were able to cover here on the podcast. But we do want to thank you for the download. We do want to thank you for the listen. And we thank you for tuning in, because today's podcast is sponsored by Baseballism. Visit baseballism.com for the best apparel in baseball. And enter the code BASHIP. That's BASHIP. And you can save 20% on your order. For Kyle, I'm JJ. We'll be back again soon. So long, everybody.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.